All right. Thank you, young people. About 9 years ago, I took over the Bible Club ministry for a couple of years, and I, working with that ministry, there was a college student whose name was Jeff Owens. He was one of the Bible Club leaders in one of the Hammond area Bible Clubs. And Brother Jeff, as we called him then, became, to me, one of the greatest helpers I've ever seen. I began to watch him a little bit, and of course, there was nothing that needed to be done that he just didn't jump in and do. And every time I turn around and about ready to find someone to do a job, Brother Jeff was already doing it or had it done. And I just noticed then that he was an incredible worker, incredible organizer. And it wasn't long after that that Brother Hiles hired him to work on the staff here at the First Baptist Church as an assistant pastor. He started a couples class and is just doing an outstanding job with the young couples of our church here. He heads the Bible Club ministry now, and it's blossomed into just one of the finest Bible Club ministry in the world. And now also teaches a full-time load at Hiles Anderson College and has become one of the great Bible teachers. And we are honored to have him on staff here at the First Baptist Church. We're honored to have him as a professor at Hiles Anderson College, and just does an awful lot of work. A very, very intricate person as far as his details, and attends to all of it. But yet, if I may, I've gotten to know him over these past 9 years. He's a very real person. And he has a tremendous heart for young people, and I'm honored that you have the opportunity to hear him this morning. So sit up straight, look right this way, and let's give him a fair hearing. Let's hear Brother Jeff Owens. I do not want you to turn in your Bible with me. I'm going to read a few verses to you from the book of 1 Kings, chapter 22. The Bible says, "And it came to pass in the third year that Jehoshaphat, the king of Judah, came down to the king of Israel. The king of Israel said unto his servants, Know ye that Ramoth in Gilead is ours, and we be still, and take it not out of the hand of the king of Syria. And he said unto Jehoshaphat, Wilt thou go with me to battle to Ramoth Gilead? And Jehoshaphat said to the king of Israel, I am as thou art, my people as thy people, my horses as thy horses. And Jehoshaphat said unto the king of Israel, Inquire, I pray thee, at the word of the Lord today, that the king of Israel gathered the prophets together, and about 400 men, and said unto them, Shall I go against Ramoth Gilead to battle, or shall I forbear? And they said, Go up, for the Lord shall deliver it into the hand of the king. And Jehoshaphat said, Is there not a prophet of the Lord beside, that we might inquire of him? And the king of Israel said unto Jehoshaphat, There is yet one man, Micaiah, the son of Imlah, by whom we may inquire of the Lord. But I hate him, for he doth not prophesy good concerning me, but evil. And Jehoshaphat said, Let not the king say so. If you were here at youth conference last year, this is the very portion of scripture I used to start last year, and I thought it only fitting that I use it again to start this year. I preached a message last year called A Young Fundamentalist, and I asked, I suppose, how many of you were privileged to be here last year and hear that message? How many of you were here last year and you heard the message, but you didn't consider it a privilege? Okay, it was kind of a wild message. I preached on a lot of different things. For instance, I preached last year about I didn't think that men ought to be hugging women they were not married to. Matter of fact, I had seen a pastor in the hallway out here that had been hugging his teenage girls from his youth department. I made a statement something like this. I said, Preacher, that either turns you on or you're a fag. I preached about youth directors always wanting to entertain they're teenagers, so much that they're constantly taking them to places like amusement parks. And I said, you know, I guess it wouldn't be bad except for the fact that usually you go to most of those places and everybody's running around about half naked, and all the music there is the kind of music that we preach against. And so I had said a few things like that, and evidently a few people had choked on it. I know I seen them choking while I was preaching. After I got finished, I went up to my office door, and there were a whole bunch of people up there. They wanted to talk with me, I'm sure. Matter of fact, they wanted to complain. So I went in my door, and I locked it, and I didn't go out and talk to them. I figured that they didn't like what I said. They had the option of lumping it. and so we just kind of left it set right where it was. That was in July of last year, and I had a speaking engagement to speak for a church in the South in the month of August, just a few weeks after youth conference had concluded. I went to O'Hare Airport, and I flew to this distant city in the South. The assistant pastor met me there, and we got in the car and headed toward the camp that I would be speaking at. And when he met me, he said, "Brother Owens," he said, "I'm so glad to see you. I'm glad that you're here. I love you, and I want you to know I'm glad that you're here." And it got quiet for a little while, and we rode in the car for a little while. A little while later, he said to me again, he said, "Brother Owens, I want you to know how glad I am that you're here, and I want you to know that I love you, and I'm glad you're here." And he got quiet for a little while, and we rode in the car for a little while. A few minutes later, he said, "Brother Owens," he said, "I want you to know that I love you, and I just thought you ought to know that." And then he said, "By the way, there's something else I want to let you know. I'm the only one here that loves you, and I might also tell you I'm the only one here that wants you here." And so I just thought it was only fair that I told you, I've got a feeling this is going to be a real long week for you. And he began to tell me this story. He said, last month at youth conference, when you were preaching, you said something about pastors that hug the teenage girls in their youth department. You said if a pastor did that, it either turned him on or he was a fag. He said, "You have to understand something. That was my pastor." And the teenagers came home awful irritated about that thing. And he said, "And then you'd preach something about entertaining and going to the amusement parks and all the nudity and all the rock and roll and the filth and the garbage there." He said, I hate to admit to this, but you had preached in the afternoon, and I had taken my whole youth department all morning long up to Great America, and we didn't come to youth conference in the morning. We'd skip the youth conference, but we did get back just in time to hear our upcoming camp speaker, and you let us have it." He said, "And they're not looking forward to this week with you at all." He said, "We came home from youth conference and all 80 teenagers boycotted camp. They dropped off the camp list. Every one of them withdrew their registration cards." He said the rebellion was led by one of the assistant pastor's daughters. They all dropped out. They all said, "If that man's going to be at camp, we're not going to be there." This youth director said to them, he said, "Now look, we're going to have camp whether you like it or not. We're going to have camp even if my wife and I are the only two people there to hear Brother Owens preach." Now, he kind of had to say that because last year when I was preaching in youth conference and I was preaching that message that made him mad, while I was preaching along, I said this. I said, "Yeah, some of you youth directors don't like what I'm saying right now. It kind of bothers you, and you'll probably cancel my speaking engagement with you. And when I found out that you wore pink pantyhose while you preached, I decided I didn't want to preach for you anyhow." So this youth director, of course, he had to say to them, "We're having camp no matter what," because he didn't want all of his teenagers to know what color his underwear were. Well, when I got to the camp, it was very evident they were not pleased to see me. Nobody would talk to me. Nobody wanted anything to do with me. And I thought, well, you know, I don't want them to think, you know, that I preach like that all the time. And I was really worried about it because they were mad. They did not like me. And so I thought, you know what I'll do? I'll back way off, and I'm gonna make them like me. And I'll back off. I won't preach on any standards or anything. I'm just going to make it easy. So the first time I preached to them, I was philosophical. I tried to make everything real smooth, and I tried everything. I tried making words rhyme and tell stories and everything, and I didn't seem to be getting anywhere. As I was preaching, they would just stare straight ahead. I gave the invitation. Nobody would do a thing. They were hard and they were cold. So I decided the next time I preach to them, I'm going to love them. And so the whole next day, I preached messages about the love of God, and I told them that I love them, and I told them that God loved them, and I told them that their preacher loved them. I tried it. By the end of the night, I thought, well, maybe we're going to get somewhere. And we came down to the very last service. I preached on the love of God, and they just stared straight ahead. They were as cold and hard as they could be. They wouldn't budge an inch. So the next day, I said, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to try humor. I'll try to make them laugh. So all day long, I preached things that were funny, told funny stories. I did everything I could to make them laugh, and they wouldn't laugh. They just stared straight ahead. They were cold, and they were hard. And I tried the next service. I said, I want to preach to them about their burdens and tell them that all young people have burdens, and I want to show them how to carry their burdens. I'd go to my room at night, and I had to lock myself in. They hated me, pulling pranks and things like that. And I'd lock myself in at night, and I prayed. And God knows my heart. I tried everything I knew. I prayed. I did not eat. I asked God. I said, God, please help me. I tried everything I knew, and it was time for the very last service of the very last night. And I decided, well, you know, I tell you what. I went and sat down to eat with them one time at their table. I thought, well, maybe if I eat with them, they'll like me more. So I went over and sat down. They cleared the table. Everybody ran. I thought, well, maybe I'll play some basketball with them. I like to play basketball, and so they were all watching two teams play. I said, hey, can I get in? They said, sure. And so somebody threw me the ball. I walked on the court. I started to dribble up the court, and I noticed both teams left the field. Everybody in the stands left me in the basketball court right all by myself. That night, I thought, you know, it's very evident that they want to hate me. I guess I might as well this evening go ahead and give them probable cause. And so the very last night I went to the chapel service, I opened my Bible and it started out something like this. I said, you are the most rotten, rebellious group of young people I have ever met in my life. I worked with gangland teenagers, and I'll tell you something. They have more Christianity in their little finger than you do. I don't want to stay here. You don't want me to stay here. I don't want to preach to you tonight. You don't want me to preach to you tonight. But you better learn something. I'm here until my plane ticket takes me back. Fasten your stinking seatbelt. You're in for the ride of your life. Well, that night, for 1.5 hours, I preached hot and heavy. I preached everything I had ever dreamed of preaching, and the fulfillment of my dream became the beginning of their nightmare. I preached the ever-loving, holy stuffings out of them. I got to the invitation. Yeah, you gotta have an invitation when you preach. I got to the invitation and I said this. Now, usually, the last night of camp, I'd give people the opportunity to surrender their lives to full-time service. I would give people the opportunity. I'd give young men the opportunity to surrender their lives to preach. I said, and since I'm a creature of habit, let me do it again here tonight. Let me see if anybody here's got the guts to serve God. I don't want to change anything. Let me give you a chance to stand up and say, you want to serve God with your life. I was mad. It was in the flesh, you see. So I said, is there a young man out here? Is there just one young man here today that's got the guts to surrender your life to preach? No matter what anybody thinks of you. I said, is there a young man here that would be willing to be a preacher and be despised by the rest of the rebels? Is there one young man here that would be willing to preach to a rebellious generation such as you? Is there a young man here that would be willing to be like me? Despised, rejected by people that are acting like heathen? I said, if so, in a minute, come up here and stand with me. And then let's pray. I'm going to my room. I bowed my head, I closed my eyes, and I said, Father, I've tried everything I know. I don't think they care. And as I was praying, I felt something beside me. And I looked up, and there was a young man standing there. And I put my hand over the mic, and I said, what do you want? He said, you told me to come. I said, come for what? He said, I want to be like you. I said, are you sure? He said, positive. And I stopped the prayer. And I said, Lord, this is it. I said, all you young people, look up here at me. Here's one. And all of a sudden, about 28 boys got up from that crowd and come up here and stood. And then here come a bunch of girls. By the time we were done, there were only 10 people in that whole youth department of 80 people that had not surrendered their life to full-time service. I went to my room that night, and I fell flat on my face, and I said, Father, I don't understand. It doesn't make sense to me. Why did that happen? And the Lord said, Jeff, he said, I think that when you started out the week pacifying them, they thought that maybe you'd changed your stand. Maybe they consider that compromise. Tonight, when you preached again in August the way you did back in July, they realized you had not changed. You meant business, and it was all very real to you. Very real. They needed a preacher who would not change his standards. See, they needed someone to give them security. They needed someone to give them stability. They needed someone to give them consistency about the holy living that a Christian should do. They needed a preacher who still believed in August what he preached back in July. They needed somebody that would preach it on Sunday and then personally turn around and live it on Monday. That's what they needed. They had other leaders that would preach one thing and live another. And they would change what they preached from year to year to keep everybody happy. You know something? Everybody has standards. Everybody has standards, and everybody wants to conform. And everybody does conform to something. Every person here, from that corner to that corner, has a standard that you live by. Everybody has standards. Everybody wants to conform. And every single person in this room does conform to something. I got to thinking about that. I want to share a few thoughts concerning those statements. Everybody has standards. Everybody wants to conform, and everybody does conform. The first thought is this. Everybody does have standards, and the world has lots of standards. Let me discuss some of them with you. Take, for instance, our hairstyles. You know, when I was in high school, you know what it was popular to do? Shave your head bald. All the athletes did it. Marble top. I'm talking about all the way bald, not halfway. I'm talking about all the way bald. That was popular. You say, that's crazy. Okay, but I don't think that's as crazy as the people that, they had a thing that was popular for a while called the rake. The rake. And that's where it looked like the fat lady next door took the hedge trimmers to the side of your house. Looks like they raked across the side of your head. And then they had a thing called the spike. Y'all know what I'm talking about. That's one where you spike it up straight on top. Look like you from outer space. Then people started painting their hair different colors. I mean, all different colors. I can remember watching at a ball game, a guy that would paint his hair red, white, and blue. Looked as strange as he could be. My son and I the other day seen a lady or something. I'm not sure what it was. She had purple hair. I couldn't believe it. You know what all those are? Standards. The world comes along and sets a standard, and then you choose to abide by their standard. There are men who will get permanence. You know, Liberace stuff. You know, they'll shave all of it and then leave one patch of long hair. There's a thing that I call the transvestite haircut. That's half man, half woman. You know, it looks like they're a man all the way back to here, and it looks like they're a woman in the back. I can remember when the mohawk haircut was kind of popular. They'd shave the side of their head and let it grow right down the middle, like the savages, the heathen Indians. And then there's the tail. It looks like, you know, you got a raccoon tail hanging back there. You better be careful what he might do on your shoulder if that's his tail. Then there are people that they'll carve their names in the side of their hair. And then there are those that, men that will grow their hair long, or women that are, they'll cut their hair off short. What are all of those? Those are hair standards. Everybody has standards. They're everywhere. Let's take, for instance, the shoes that people wear. There was, for a while, it was popular to wear your shoes but have no shoelaces in them. I don't know why. That's what people did. That was the standard that the world set, so we wanted to follow it. Then you go back years, back when Elvis Presley was alive, and they would sing a song called Blue Suede Shoes, and everybody wanted to wear blue suede shoes. Did you know that they actually wore platform tennis shoes for a while? I'm talking about high-heeled tennis shoes. Then everybody wanted to wear army boots. Then you finally decided it wasn't good not to have shoestrings in your shoes, so we put shoestrings in them, but we just didn't tie them. Huh? Then men started wearing high heels. Some of you don't know this. Go to the Goodwill and look at a pair of shoes that come from, you know, back in dinosaur days, and you'll find that men used to wear the high-heeled shoes like women do today. Then I can remember when it was popular to wear white patent leather shoes. Well, the house, you probably wore some of those, didn't you? I thought you probably did. White patent leather shoes. Then there's the thing that I call it the elf shoe. You ever seen them? They don't have heels. They're made out of kind of a brushed leather, green and yellow, have a little point at the end. It's a Keebler cookie look, you know, the elves in the tree, I guess, wore them and brought them into our society. So what is that? Those are shoe standards. And then let's take the pants that men wear. I said men wear. Let's take those pants. Did you know that it was popular for a while to wear a thing called bell bottoms? That's where it's a bottom, and if you have them on, I apologize, didn't mean to embarrass you, you youth directors. All right, they got this thing called bell bottom, and the bottom of the pants were real wide. Sometimes the bottom of your pant leg was as big as your waistband. Now, not on all of you. Some of you, they don't have enough material for that. But the truth is, it was wide at the bottom. And we went from a thing called a bell bottom. If you wore bell bottoms, you could work part-time as a kite. And they'd take you up there and fly you. Plenty of material. And then we went from that, we went to peg leg pants. And that's where you got to grease your foot before you put it in the pants so it'll slip through the hole at the bottom. It was so tight. And then people started wearing oversized pants. To where they don't fit in, you need about, you know, a truckload of rope to tie them up. And then they started wearing their pants backwards. I'm sure you've seen that. They turned their pants around backwards. You know where that came from? That came from the fags. They turned their britches around backwards. And then we got this thing where we started buying pants and they had patches sewed on them, but there was no hole underneath the patch. Now, when I was growing up, you always put a patch over the hole to cover up the hole. Now you buy a pair of pants that doesn't have a hole with a patch on it or there's something wrong with you. And then we started buying faded blue jeans. Why did we buy faded blue jeans? I don't know why, but when I was growing up, if your pants faded, you didn't want to wear them. Now, if you don't wear faded blue jeans, they're not right. There's something wrong with them. Then there, you know, you can buy jeans today that are already tore up. They have to have tears in them. They're more expensive if they're torn. Now, when I used to come home, I'd get in an awful lot of trouble for tearing up my jeans. But now, if they don't have tears in them, there's something wrong. Now, they've got baggy pants and hip-hops and bib overalls. What are all of these? They're standards. They're just standards. And you think we're crazy at the church? You think there's something wrong with us? Come on. Now, let's take the dresses that ladies wear. Ladies, not just girls or women, ladies. Let's take we had what we called the mini skirt. Now, we went from a mini skirt to a maxi. Let me say this. It's sin for a woman to wear a mini skirt, but it's exceedingly sinful for fat women to wear them. It's a little, you can find that in Owens chapter 2, verse number 1. Hey, and then we had the maxi. The mini, it came up so high. It was pathetic. And then the maxi, it went down so low, you walked over it and tripped while you were walking. And then they have the wrinkled look. Now, at one time, for your dress to be wrinkled, it was wrong, but at another time, you buy a dress that's already wrinkled. We can't make up our minds. We have major oversized dresses. You know, you wonder if there are two people in there by chance. They have form-fitting dresses. You can get, they take this thing of the slit in the dress. You can get a slit that's an inch long, or you can get one from your ankle to your head. They've got them all. Hey, I call them, the form-fitting, I call those elastic dresses. That's where you get four of your friends, they hold the four corners of the dress, you dive in, they all let go, and you're shrink-wrapped. That's a form-fitting dress. What are those? Those are dress standards. That's all they are. Take jewelry. Used to be girls wore jewelry. So what's happening? And then the girls had enough sense. I mean, they started out, and it wasn't real gaudy. They would wear an earring in both ears. Then they developed something else. Then they would put two earrings in both ears. You know, today you can find girls with 8 or 10 earrings in one ear. And then the boys, I don't know what happened here. Evidently the boys are mixed up, so they started wearing earrings. They start out with one in one ear and then another in another ear. And you got boys wearing all sorts of jewelry. You know, it's even to the point today where girls get their noses pierced. That's what you do with a pig, a sow on the farm. They have their nose pierced. We have women wanting to be sows today. What are these? They're standards. Hey, don't tell me people don't want standards. Don't tell me people don't want absolutes. Don't tell me that we don't want to conform. Yes, we want to conform. The problem is we want to set our own standards. We want to conform to that which we choose to dream up. We're going to pick our dress code. We're going to pick the way we should wear our hair. We're going to pick the way we act. You know, everybody has standards. You know what? The standards that you don't like are the ones that you need to change, to conform to. Those are the ones you don't like. You don't like the ones where you need to change. You see, if you have the world's standards, you're very insecure. You want to know why? They always change. You're very insecure. There are people in here, you're suicidal. I'll tell you why. You're so mixed up chasing things that change constantly. You can't figure out, does anybody love me? Does my mom care? Does my dad care? Does my preacher care? Why don't you settle down and realize God always has cares? That does not change. You wouldn't be so insecure if you were that way. God's standards never change. And we need to go back to living some old-fashioned standards. You'll be secure that way. See, today we must choose to let the standards drop to the character of the Christians, or choose to bring the character of the Christians back up to the standard. Let me say something. Hiles Anderson College is not going to drop their standards to the character of the people. You're coming up to meet the standard of God. In the Owens household, we don't drop the standard to the character of the people. We'll raise the character of the people to the standard. And that's what we need. We don't need to drop the standard to get the people, bring the people up to the standard. Don't back off on the standard. You know, here's our problem. Too many of us use our distance from the world to determine our standards. I say this, too many of us use our distance from the world to determine our standards. Let me show you what I mean. Brother Eddie, I need someone to be the world. Now, here's what we're going to do. Brother Eddie is the world. I am the church. And you see the distance between me and the world and Brother Eddie? Turn around and look that way. That helps me immensely. Now, he's the world. I'm the church. And there's a distance between me and the world. And I say, look, I'm not like the world. But this is what's happened, young people. The world has gotten more wicked. And so the world take a couple of steps in that direction. The world is more wicked today than it's ever been. And the church says, look at the distance here. You know, I guess I could step up to here because there's still the same distance between me and the world. But guess where I am now? I am now standing exactly where the world used to be. And then the world gets more wicked and wicked and wicked, and the world takes a couple steps toward the filth of the devil. And the church says, well, I guess we could move up to here. I mean, look at the distance between me and the world. And now you're standing where the world used to be. But I'll tell you something about it. The world used to be right here, too. And they said, we'll never go there. We'll never dress like that. We'll never act like that. And now many of you stand in the way you act and the way you dress and the way you live. You stand where the world would have never gone. I'm talking about the heathen, lost, filthy, immoral, devil-loving world. You are now standing exactly where they wouldn't even have gone. Brother Eddie, thank you. And so, in many cases, there are lots of people in this room, and you say, I'm not like the world. You're right. You're not exactly like the world of today, but you're like the world of 10 years ago. And if it was wrong, it was wrong. You see, you thought, well, I'm not like them. You are like them. You are like them of 10 years ago. Like them of 15 years ago. You know, there was a day in America where a filthy, lost, heathen, immoral, a filthy woman wouldn't even put on a pair of pants. I'm talking about a lost person. And today, we got to fight you. We shouldn't have to preach that. There was a day in America when a lost man wouldn't grow his hair long. Oh, today they will. You know that in most cases, and I wish I had a lot of time to attribute to this. I can't. I wish I did. But in most cases, the music that the Christians listen to today was the rock and roll of yesterday. And you know it.
It's rotten. It's filthy. Many Christians say, well, I'm not like the rebels of the world. No, you're not like the rebels of today. You're just like the rebels of yesterday. You say, but look at the distance between me and the world. I'm not exactly like the world. Yes, you're like the world, and you're not supposed to determine your Christianity based on how close to the world you are. You need to stop and ask yourself, am I close to the world or am I close to God? You think you're a good Christian because you're not exactly like the world. No, you're not a good Christian because you're not like the world. You're a good Christian because you're like Christ. And so, you say, Brother Owens, what should I be doing? You should be doing this. The world's going that way. I should be going this way. I should be singing, the world behind me, the cross before me. The world behind me, the cross before me. I'll tell you something. The more we learn about the Bible, and the more we learn how to pray, and the more we learn about Jesus, the purer you ought to be. The more holy you ought to be. You know, you say, Brother Owens, there's some things that you're really tough on. Wait till next year. I ought to be purifying. I ought to be magnifying my Lord more, not less. How you live is not to be determined by how close you are to the world. Oh, and there are a lot of reasons why people compromise their standards. There are a lot of reasons. First of all, I said everybody has standards. Everybody wants to conform, and everybody does conform. The problem is you want to conform to what you want to conform to rather than what God wants you to conform to. And then we use our distance from the world to determine our standards. There are reasons why we compromise. For instance, Samson compromised for the opposite sex in the book of Judges. Had a gal by the name of Delilah, and he compromised. And he was defeated by it. Every young man here, you listen. You can get a woman and you get one soon enough, but don't you compromise to get one. You get you a decent woman, a moral woman, a holy woman. Not a loudmouth Jezebel that causes a whole bunch of teenagers in the youth department to rebel against the preaching. Some of you teenage boys need to rise up and take your youth department back over and quit letting the women run it. I'm so sick and tired of having the girls run everything. It's pathetic. Girls run nothing around me. Now, my wife, that's a different story. Samson compromised for Delilah. Girls, you listen to me. If he compromised his standards with you before marriage, he will compromise with some other woman after he's married to you. Don't compromise for the opposite sex. I probably ought to say, some of you pastors and youth directors ought to be listening to what I'm saying. You've got a wife. You take care of her. You keep your hands off of everyone else. Why do we compromise our standards? We also compromise our standards for the crowd. You find Peter. He's on his way to follow Jesus to the cross, and he begins to compromise when he gets around the crowd. You know, if you compromise to gain friends, that's silly, because the kind of people that you must compromise to win over won't be worth having once you get them. You know, you can't have everybody like you. You might as well go ahead and settle that. Everybody wants everybody to like them. If everybody likes you, you're getting a little bit too charismatic for me. Everybody's not going to like the standards of God. There are some people that just won't like you, young lady, because you're clean. Don't compromise for the crowd. You know that knowing that God loves you is enough. People in our generation have got to learn something. You've got to learn to be willing to walk alone. If nobody else in your youth department wants to live the high standard, you live it without them. You do right. Learn to walk alone. Learn to stand alone. It wouldn't matter to me. It wouldn't matter to me if everybody in this room dropped your standards. I'm not dropping mine. If Hiles Anderson College dropped their standards, I'll leave that place. I'll go out and go somewhere else and start something. Say, Brother Owens, should you say that? It doesn't matter to me right now. We will keep the standards up. If one person has to walk alone, walk alone. Walk alone. Walk alone. We compromise for the crowd. We compromise for the opposite sex. Then you compromise for yourself. You just don't like it. Lot chose to go to Sodom and Gomorrah. He wanted to. He wanted to live that way. The reason a lot of you let your standards down is because the only person you care for is yourself. You forget that there's a world watching you that needs to see some good, secure, consistent, old-fashioned Christianity. See, you want to choose your own standard, But you've forgotten the only person that helps is you. You live God's way. That'll help a lot of people. There's a story. A regiment of men were about to go into battle. In the front of this regiment of men, there would be three people that would lead them. There would be a bugle boy, a drummer boy to play a cadence. There would be a man that would hold the flag. They called it the standard. They started into battle. These three were out in front. The young man playing the cadence. He seemed to pick it up faster and faster. And before long, there was quite some distance between these three men, the bugle boy, the drummer boy, and the standard bearer. There was a distance between them and all their men back there with guns to protect them. And before long, these three, the standard bearer, the bugle boy, and the drummer, they were almost right on top of the enemy and being shot at and then charging them. One of the men in the back of their crowd back there that was there to protect them, one of the men with the gun, he said to the flag bearer, the standard bearer, he said, "Standard bearer, bring the standard back to the men." And a scared young man turned around with that standard in his hand and he looked back and he said, "No! Bring the men up to the standard. I want young men with some guts. Help them to conquer that whole army. We're not bringing the standard back to you. Come on up. Come on up. Come on up. Let's bring them in up to the standard." Everybody has standards. Everybody wants to conform. And everybody does. I'm to be conformed to the image of Christ. Yeah.